Thank you very much. Good morning, Council. Welcome to the December session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is Larry Welch, appearing from Plattsmouth today. I'm pleased to be joined by Judge Dave Arterburn of Papillion, Nebraska, and Judge Rico Bishop of Lincoln, Nebraska. All of us are appearing remotely today. We appreciate you attending. Let's just go through real quick and make sure everybody can hear me. Counsel for the appellant, can you hear me okay?
Yes, Your Honor, I can. Matthew Meyerly from the Lancaster County Public Defender's Office. Can you hear me okay? They seem to have taken this moment to mow the grass outside of my office. So
we can hear you fine. Thank you.
Okay, terrific. Thank you.
And counsel for the appellate?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you both. Remind you both that even though we're all appearing remotely today, that these proceedings are public in nature. We're not live streaming, but we will record and archive these. So if there's anything confidential about the nature of your remarks today, please keep that in mind during the course of your oral arguments. This matter is case number 20-0029, State versus Montoya. Counsel for the appellant, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Matthew Meyerly. I'm an attorney with the Lancaster County Public Defender's Office. I'm appearing today on behalf of the appellant, Lorenzo Montoya. Mr. Montoya was convicted following a jury trial in the Lancaster County District Court of two offenses. One was refusal of a chemical test with two prior convictions, and the second was a misdemeanor offense for refusal to submit to a pretest. We assigned a number of errors arising out of the case, both from the motion to suppress stage and the trial itself, and I'll kind of take them up in the order that they were set out in the brief. However, of course, if the court wants to direct me to any particular issue, certainly I'd be happy to address that however the court sees fit. We're asking the court first and foremost to reverse Mr. Montoya's conviction for refusal of a chemical test because we believe that the court erred in overruling Mr. Montoya's motion to suppress in this case. The motion to suppress in this case was upheld by the trial court essentially on the basis of a community caretaker type stop. The facts were that officers from the sheriff's office here in Lancaster County received a call for service that a vehicle was parked out on a gravel road sort of out west of town, were dispatched to that stop and located Mr. Montoya and subsequently undertook a DUI investigation, found reason to believe that Mr. Montoya was under the influence of alcohol and subsequently arrested him. But our contention in this case is that there was insufficient evidence adduced at the motion to suppress, and again, at trial, for the court to find that initial contact with Mr. Montoya was reasonable because there was no information adduced either as to the identity or the reliability of the initial reporting party and no testimony from any of the initial responding volunteer fire and rescue personnel that responded. The community caretaker exception, what the Nebraska courts have articulated both in Bakewell and more recently in the Schiffermiller case, is that the community caretaker exception must be based on specific and articulable facts and that it is subject to the same ultimate test of reasonableness as any other warrantless stop. That reasonable suspicion depends, both on the content of the information possessed by law enforcement officers and its reliability. Here, there was no...
Mr. Meyerly, under that argument, would it ever be reasonable to respond to a 911 call?
I think that it would be reasonable to respond to a 911 call, but then the question becomes, once that 911 call gives rise to suspicion of criminal activity...
Okay, and but the community caretaker function isn't concerned with whether there's criminal activity, is there?
No, Your Honor, but a community caretaker exception is an exception to the warrant requirement and is subject to the same test of reasonableness as other warrantless search exceptions. I think that's what the court said in Cranawitter, or sorry, not Cranawitter, but in Schiffmiller as well as in Bakewell.
So I want to make sure I want to understand your position. Are you saying under these circumstances where a call comes into dispatch saying that there's a motorist on the side of the road slumped over, that the police have to first go and find whoever called and do some take some additional first party evidence before they actually respond to help the gentleman?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that's our position. However, our position is that once officers do respond, and once ultimately, that whatever they find gives rise to suspicion of criminal activity, that there are some steps that could be taken in the course of the prosecution of that case, even so far as just identifying the identity of the reporting party in the dispatch call, or presenting information from the volunteer fire and rescue personnel at the motion to suppress stage, or at trial, in order to establish both the reliability of that information and the content of the information itself.
Why do you have to establish the reliability of the initial call if there's no problem in responding to the call? Now, I understand your point that at some point this flips from being community caretaker into a reasonable suspicion scenario, but I don't understand why that would relate back to the reliability of the initial caller.
Well, Your Honor, I think it arises out of our argument that this is essentially an anonymous tip, and that under longstanding precedent going back to Alabama versus White and Florida versus JL, that those anonymous tips alone are generally disfavored. And that in Florida versus JL, the United States Supreme Court held that such bare bones anonymous tips are insufficient to furnish reasonable suspicion for purposes of the Fourth Amendment. And so we think that there has to be some sort of threshold finding of the reliability when it's challenged at a motion to suppress in order for the court to find that the stop ultimately is reasonable. And so that...
Well, you're not complaining about the rescue squad responding, is that correct?
No, the rescue squad
All right. So if that's the case, so then when we start looking at reasonable suspicion, we need to look at, what do we need to look at? You can take into account, I suppose, that the initial statement, we don't know who called that in. At least our record doesn't show that. But then we would have the information provided by the rescue squad to the officers, correct?
Yeah, and I think
as well as their observations when they arrive.
Yes, Your Honor. I think it's fairly comparable to what the facts were in California versus Navarette. In that case, both the initial reporting party as well as the dispatch caller who called in this DUI that was suspected, neither one of those individuals testified at the motion to suppress. And so it was essentially taken as an anonymous tip. I think that what could have been done differently in this case is that the officers who responded probably could have noted the identity of either the rescue personnel in their reports, or that those rescue personnel could have potentially been called in as witnesses at the motion to suppress. Because again, and this kind of feeds into some of our other arguments, there was no evidence that was ever presented either by the officers or by the state, the rescue personnel, anybody, that Mr. Montoya was ever actually slumped over the wheel of the vehicle. And so
I'm going to interrupt you for a second because you're running out of time, and I want to hear from you with regard to your position that you were entitled to a jury trial here. You're not taking the position that you were entitled to, you had a constitutional right to a jury trial. You said that you had a statutory right to 125 2705. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honors. 252705 does confer a statutory right to a jury trial in the case, assuming that certain criteria are met. In other words, that there's a demand made in writing within 10 days, and also assuming that the charge does not fall within certain categories of offenses, which are categorically excluded.
Like, so here's my specific question for you. Doesn't 252705 entitle you to a jury trial in county court? What would entitle you to a jury trial in district court pursuant to the statute?
Well, the statute provides, and it was quoted in the brief, and I don't have the statute number off the top of my head, but that all provisions of jury trials in county court are applicable in district court or vice versa.
The so difference, because you don't have that in front of you, I'm going to read it to you. You're talking about subsection 2, which says all provisions of law relating to juries in the district court shall apply to juries in the county courts. Is that what you're taking the position stands for, the proposition that you're entitled to a jury trial in district court?
I believe we would be entitled to a jury trial in district court. District court is a court of general jurisdiction. This was an amendment to the information that was added just prior to trial. We believe that that court's general jurisdiction, as well as the jury demand filed, would entitle Mr. Montoya to a jury trial in the case. Again, because it is not included as a traffic infraction, it's not included as a regular infraction, it's not a city ordinance violation. I see that I'm out of time.
Mr. Meyerly, if I can just hold you on for a second, just to help you out, I think, wasn't it 24517 was the other statute that you were citing to, that where you believed that, which sub 6 of that statute says the district court shall have concurrent original jurisdiction in any criminal matter classified as a misdemeanor that arises from the same incident as a charged felony?
That is correct.
So I felt like you were arguing that kind of since the district court's jurisdiction is based on county court having primary jurisdiction, that in this scenario district court is adopting county court jurisdiction. Is that
correct? And I think that is a clear reading of 24517, in the same way that if a felony is bound over and other lesser misdemeanors are added on by the state in district court following the filing of the information, the jury trial right attaches to all of the later filed misdemeanors because they all arise out of the same incident as the charged felony. So our position is that Mr. Montoya was entitled to a jury trial on that refusal of the PBT count. I believe the state agrees with us on that regard. And so with that, we're asking the court to vacate Mr. Montoya's conviction on that count as well. With that, I'd submit.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the state.
Good morning. May it please the court. Matt Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is a direct appeal of appellant's convictions of refusal of a chemical test with two prior convictions, class 3 felonies, 3A felonies, and then a refusal to submit a pretest, the class 5 misdemeanor. The felony conviction resulted from the jury trial, and a misdemeanor conviction as a determination made by the bench after the conclusion of the jury trial. As was covered by Mr. Meyerly, I'll just, you know, take these in order, I suppose, unless the court has specific things that they want me to address first. So turning first to the motion to suppress, Mr. Montoya argues that the state did not establish a basis for community caretaking, given his belief that the information that caused the call to police about his conduct was not reliable to his satisfaction. The state contends that deputies Bachman and Sarnes reasonably stopped Mr. Montoya, which was established by the totality of the circumstances. This developed into reasonable suspicion that he was driving under the influence, given the testimony and evidence provided by the officers during the hearing. Specifically at the motion to suppress hearing, the district court heard testimony from the responding and arresting officers describing their interactions with Montoya that led them to believe that he was driving under the influence. So initially, they just receive a report from dispatch of a motorist slumped behind the wheel of his stopped motor vehicle in the roadway. They receive no other details as far as I'm aware. When they arrive on scene, rural emergency service personnel are telling the officers that they thought that Mr. Montoya was intoxicated based on their interactions with him. Seeing that Mr. Montoya was exhibiting signs of alcohol consumption upon approach, including smelling of alcohol and watery bloodshot eyes, they came to very similar suspicions. Further interactions with him described that he had no driver's license on him. And I think that there was also some discussion about where he had come from. He said that he had been at the rail yard in downtown Lincoln, where he had been consuming alcohol, I think watching a fight with friends at a bar. And then the officers also then began the field sobriety tests, which Mr. Montoya did fairly poorly on most, if not all of them. There is dash cam footage of this stop and arrest that confirms most of these details. The state believes that Mr. Montoya hasn't articulated it, specifically what is not credible about the 911 call, where a concerned party calls about a potentially dangerous or maybe in danger motorist having a medical episode, and the dispatch sends police to check on the report. The state would submit that this was inherently reasonable, and that this requirement that Mr. Montoya seems to be creating, looking for more reliable evidence or more you know, proof of credibility, isn't necessary under the legal standards that are provided under cases that deal with the community caretaking exception. As a result, the state submits the district court was not in error in affirming the for holding the overruling the motion to suppress evidence.
So would you turn to the issue of count three and the right to a jury trial? We acknowledge that the state seems to concede it, but I'm asking you specifically as it relates to 25-2705 subsection 2, why you think that they're entitled to a jury trial in district court pursuant to that statute?
Well, as laid out in the state's brief, district court, in denying the request for jury trial, which was timely, specifically stated that the district court did not think that the infraction was required a jury trial as a result. And the reading of the statutes make clear that the statute specifically allows for a demand of jury trial in either party. To a case, except criminal cases arising under city or village ordinances, traffic infractions, or other infractions. And then 29-3605 sub 2 specifically provides that refusal of a PBT 60-6197.04 covering PBT refusal is not a minor traffic violation in definitionally. The district court stated on the record that it was treated as an infraction. However, I believe that statement was a misstatement, and that the statutes, when taken together, define first what the statutory right for a jury trial is, and what infractions that those apply to, or what offenses those apply to, and what is specifically not an infraction, and what is an infraction that would make that something that would or would not apply.
Right. So assuming that 25-2705 would apply if this is county court, explain to me why the state takes the position that 25-2705 applies to district.
I think as was covered earlier, I would also agree that the concurrent jurisdiction that would be recognized by the district court for a matter that would ordinarily be heard in the county court would create the same following of the same rules that would come out in 25-2705.
You get through 24-517 sub 6. Mm-hmm. We were to utilize that in connection with 25-2705. That's what would entitle him to the jury trial here.
Yes, and along with the definitions provided in Chapter 29 and 3605-2 that define what offenses are minor and infractions versus non. And if there are no further questions on that, I'll turn next to the dispatch call contents. Mr. Montoya signs that the dispatch call, the contents of the dispatch call were an issue of hearsay that should not have been allowed. He filed a motion in limine and then offered a timely objection to trial. Also objecting to those contents, the district court allowed the testimony about the contents of the 911 call. Despite that, the state agrees with the district court and thinks that the ruling that the content of the call was not hearsay is correct. The content of the call used in the suppression hearing and at trial was not definitional hearsay and that it was not offered for the truth of the matter asserted. The responding officer, Deputy Sarnes, testified as to what the police dispatch said that preceded his arrival on the scene, the investigation into Montoya's activities that night and his eventual arrest. To the state, this is classic effect on the listener. At no point did either of the officers or any of the testimony or evidence assert that Mr. Montoya was actually slumped over at the steering wheel or was seen having slumped over at the steering wheel. There was no attempts by any of the witnesses to frame the content of the call as anything but, you know, simply the reason that emergency services were called to the scene in the first place, which is what eventually led to their interactions with Mr. Montoya, which developed into the reasonable suspicion and eventually his arrest. Alternatively, you know, the state would also contend that even if the call contents were wrongfully admitted by the district court, the effect of the inclusion, given the other evidence in the case, would in my eyes, render the result harmless at best, given that you have rural EMS telling the officers that they responded to what they believed, Mr. Montoya being under the influence, Mr. Montoya's condition on approach, his responses to the officers' questions, his poor FST performance, and then refusal of both the PBT on the scene and the data master downtown. So in total, the state submits that the district court did not abuse its discretion in allowing evidence and testimony that included the content of the dispatch call prior to Mr. Montoya's arrest. As for Mr. Montoya's other assignments of error, the state would just submit on the brief unless there are specific questions. And if there are no further questions, the state just asks for the court to affirm the district court in a manner outlined in the state's brief.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis. And I don't believe that there's any more time for the appellant. Is that correct, Ellie?
That is correct, Your Honor.
The matter is submitted. We thank you both for attending today remotely. The matter is submitted.